You're listening to the USCA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USCA eventing news. Welcome to the USCA official podcast, episode 267. Now, on today's show, listeners, it is all about US and UK eventing, the similarities, the differences, the challenges, and I have got two exceptional guests lined up to share their experiences with us. They're two of US eventing's brightest young stars. I will start by saying a very warm welcome to Andrew McConnon.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Andrew, I know you spent a couple of years over here in the UK. Well, you've been back in the States a couple of years now as well. So we're going to pick your brains on your time on UK soil in just a second. But my second guest is currently here in the UK, and it is Lexi Scoville. Lexi, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. Can't wait.
Now, we're really looking forward to this. Both of you have Fox Pit eventing experience. Andrew, you are based over here with William for a couple of years. Lexi, you are here now. So we're going to pick your brains on Team Fox Pit a little bit later on in the show. But first of all, Andrew, I wanted to ask you, because on our last episode of the USCA official podcast, we actually had Eric Duvander and Leslie Law on the show talking about the Adequan Futures Team Challenge, which took place just over a week ago. And you were on Leslie's team. How was it?
I was actually on Team Eric.
You were on the winning team.
I was on the winning team, yes. We had a fantastic time, honestly. It was a great opportunity to be part of a really good team. We traveled up. I'm down in North Carolina, Southern Pines, North Carolina. So it's about an 8-hour drive for me. But I headed up on Monday, and we had training sessions Tuesday and Wednesday. Tuesday, we had a jump school with Eric, which was great. And then we had a flat school the next day in preparation for the dressage test, which started Thursday. But yeah, overall had a really good time. It was great to get to know my teammates. Really nice to be able to get better and competition and came out with the win. So very exciting.
And Eric, that means he is unbeaten in the Futures Challenge as
he
well.
He is. Yes, they made it clear that they would like to keep that streak alive at the beginning of the week. So yeah, no pressure, but we were able to pull it out of the bag for him. So yeah, very excited.
How was that team experience? Because one of the things that we very much spoke about on the show, and actually I guess that will come into this show, is in the UK, there is a real opportunity for riders, whether they are based, they ride for Great Britain or whether they ride for other European countries, to take part in the Nations Cup competitions. And so they get that sort of team experience. And that is what the Adequan Futures Team Challenge is all about in the States, because it isn't obviously feasible for you guys to jump on a plane and take part in that Nations Cup series. So how was that experience in terms of giving you that team mileage?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I didn't have the opportunity to ride at Young Riders. I got a little bit of a late start into eventing and didn't have the opportunity, or wasn't at the level to do Young Riders. So this was actually my first kind of team experience. They made it feel very legit. It was lots of good education, lots of good experiences. It definitely understood what we needed to do to compete. And whether we were to go a little bit quick cross country or what our instructions were. I think it's a really good opportunity for people over here in the US to gain a little bit of exposure. I think it's really good for owners and sponsors and for the business side of it as well. I know that my owner was really excited to be there on the weekend and to cheer their horse on. And I think it's just a great opportunity all around.
Yeah, and there's going to be another one in the West Coast or on the West Coast a little bit later on this year. And then hopefully we'll be following the progress on the show in 2021 as well. Lexi, you're currently based over here in the UK with William Fox Pitt and team. You've just actually been at Burnham Market International. Tell us about your Burnham Market experience, because it's a good box ticked for you guys, wasn't it?
Yeah, Team Fox Pitt had an amazing weekend. We just took the two horses to Burnham Market. we were trying to kind of limit runs for the bigger horses. So this was just my horses needed a 5-star qualification run. And William had his young 8-year-old doing her first 4-long. And it was a little bit of a strange event, you know, because we weren't at a typical 4-long. There were no spectators. There were no parties. It just had a very different feel. But the team there did an amazing job kind of doing their best with the circumstances. They tried to put a bit of atmosphere in the dressage ring, and they got us a full length cross country course, which Burnham Market is not originally set up to do along. So they did an amazing job using their space as well as they could. And we're so grateful that we got our qualifications in. You know, originally when Blenheim canceled, there were going to be no 4-longs in the UK at all this year. So we're so, so grateful that that happened. And then we, William and I both had really good runs. We did double clears for both horses. We both intended to go a bit slow because the ground's a bit hard over the here right now. Again, the team did the very best they could with it, but they just have not had rain in months. So we kind of had steady rounds. Neither of us were very competitive, but we're really pleased with our horses for jumping clear cross country and then really good clear show jumping rounds the next day.
So you did what you went to do, and we will chat a little bit about your future plans later on in the show. But let's talk UK eventing and how it compares to the US. So Lexi, you're over here now. I think, was it the start of 2019 that you came over?
Yeah, moved over beginning of February 2019. So I did a whole season last year and as much of a season as there was this year.
What a year to be over here away from home. That's what I would say. Strange times. Andrew, you actually were based over here 2016, 2017. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And you also worked at William Fox Pitts. And I think is that the link between Lexi, you going to William?
Yeah, absolutely. I was fortunate to meet Andrew right after he came back from Williams. And when I was a little bit stuck for my next step in life, he suggested I came over here, and it was absolutely the best decision I could have made. I've loved it here.
Oh, well, that's what we like. Okay, talk about first impressions of eventing when you come over here, because obviously it is an exceptionally different beast. The UK is significantly smaller than the US, which means that there are sort of different challenges and very much a different environment, I imagine. What was your first impression, Andrew, when you came eventing on UK soil, and how it compared to US eventing?
I think it's really interesting going over, because I think part of you thinks that it's going to be wildly different. At the same time, it's the same 3 phases. It's the same kind of same similar atmosphere, but there are quite a few differences, obviously. I expected a lot more rain than I got, at least in the 2 years that I was there. I brought a couple rain jackets and expected to need to buy a few more, but it was pretty dry the years I was there. But I think the amount of quality competitors is the biggest difference. And also the backdrops at some of the venues can't be missed as well. But the amount of quality competitors is just outstanding. You have everybody from Nicola Wilson and, Andrew Nicholson and Ollie Town. I mean, the list goes on. Tim Price, it goes on and on and on. And they're in all of the different divisions. And I think that's really good to not only ride next to and against, but it's also good to watch and to see how they do things and ride their lines. And I think you can learn a lot by watching. And there is no shortage of good horses and good riders to watch in the UK for sure.
Lexi, what hit you, your first impression on UK eventing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a really good point what Andrew brought up. You realize you're running a full day of intermediate horses, and at some of the competitions, you've got 2 full days of intermediate. You know, you can't even imagine that in the US, and they're all very competitive. You know, I have a horse that's pretty competitive back home in the US and showed up here and realized I really had to do my homework to compete against everyone else. You know, I was in the bottom half after dressage at my first competition, and I'd never been in that position with this horse before. So that was a bit of a change. Certainly, I know it also surprised me to go to an intermediate and realize kind of their dressage rings are just a couple boards on the ground on the grass. You know, it's not all enclosed. It doesn't look fancy. It's literally about 8 boards on the ground, and there are gaps between them. And it kind of looks a little bit like an unaffiliated back home. If that, I mean, some of the unaffiliated back home would be, you know, have more complete dressage rings.
Really?
But, I think that was quite a surprise for me. It has, you know, while it's more competitive and bigger, it also has a little bit more of a backyard feel in some ways.
Okay.
That's true, actually.
You know, it doesn't
Good
feel
point.
Like you're at a big upper level competition. It's pretty surprising, to be honest.
Do we, because I mean, you could come over to the UK and, like Andrew said, there would be some incredible backdrops and very, very parkland and everything like that. But actually, you know, the show jumping might be on a bit of a slope and your dressage arenas aren't as fancy. In the US, do you get more sort of purpose-built facilities where your events are?
Yeah, I think absolutely. You've obviously got a bit of a spread. Some are on the grass, not on perfectly level surface, but I think a bigger proportion would do the dressage and the show jumping on a surface.
Okay.
They are built to run events, and they run events multiple times a year, whereas over here there are a lot more that are kind of multi-purpose facilities. They might, you know, have a hunt that goes through, they might run some hunter trials, but there's much less of the built-up infrastructure at a lot of them.
Yeah, and actually it is a very good point. We do have some sort of events that run national competitions, the likes of Aston Lewalls and places like that in the Midlands and in the middle of the country that would be very purpose-built. But actually quite a lot of events in the UK are sort of a pop-up shop, so to speak, in that they pop up for that event at sort of 11 and a half months of the year. They are in their sort of natural habitat. They don't see another horse necessarily in competition. Now, actually, I've got a little pop quiz. So Lexi already knows the answer to this one, but I have got, because we love an equerating stat on this show, and I have got in front of me the number of runs or the number of horses that went cross country on both US soil and UK soil. If I say to you that there were a grand total of 38,692 in the US in 2019, how many would you say were in the UK in the same period?
I would have to guess it might be less than double. So I'd say 75,000 starts on cross country.
Pretty good shout, to be fair. 64,346 in total on the UK, which absolutely mad, because the UK would fit in the US 40 times over. It's comparatively a very, very small country. I mean, some of your states are probably about as big as us. but just to put it into context, actually, 75% of starts in the US last year were at modified level and below, and that is 105 level in the UK, so the new level that was introduced last year. And to compare that to UK, 65% of runs were at 105 and below. So a slightly smaller percentage of people competing at the very, very lower levels in the UK compared to the US. But I find it really interesting, because one of the things that I think we've mentioned and we'll talk about now is the sort of the number of horses that would run in a day in the UK. How does that compare to the US? So in the UK, you would get anywhere from sort of around 250 competitors in a day just on the time of year and entries and everything else, but there or thereabouts. How does that compare to the US, Andrew?
In the US, we typically run over 2 or 3 days. So, and we very rarely would compete midweek, like on a Monday or Wednesday, like is pretty common in the UK. But a typical weekend in the U.S. over either Friday, Saturday, or Sunday would be anywhere between 250 to, say, 350 entries. And that would be quite a good competition. But again, that is split over the 3 days. Whereas when I was in the U.K., there would be, like you said, a couple hundred horses per day. And I think they're just so efficient at getting horses safely and calmly through each day of the week. It's impressive.
It's amazing. And I suppose the smaller travel distances help, because people don't have to travel as far to events. How would that compare in terms of the frequency in which people run their horses, Lexi? Would that be fairly comparative, would you say? Or do people in the UK run more frequently than in the US?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think it depends a lot on your program and what you believe. But I think in general, kind of the upper level horses over here are probably running a bit more often, mostly because the season is so much shorter. You kind of have to start out and get your first few runs under your belt. I mean, especially looking at the horses that are aimed at badminton, the season starts at the earliest at the beginning of March. And generally the first couple of weekends of competition over here are canceled. So you've kind of got to get enough runs in before your big long in the spring. And so sometimes that means horses are running back-to-back weekends or every other weekend for a few kind of weeks in a row. And that would be less common back in the US because, you know, you're starting your season in January and the first kind of long is in April at Kentucky. So you've got so much of a longer period of time to get your horses fit and prepared that you kind of have the luxury to be able to take an extra week or two between your events. Whereas here you just have to cram it in as much as you can. But also I think to kind of, especially at that time, the footing tends to be a bit better over here. So you don't feel quite as guilty running as your horses as often. You know, you can do it in a little bit of a kinder way on the horses.
Yeah, and actually you make a very good point because the US season starts in January and really runs all the way through to sort of November time. There's a big long format in November. The new 5-star at Fair Hill is going to be at the end of October. So that is, you know, 10, 11 months of the year compared to the March to October that you would have traditionally on UK soil. And to be fair, yes, some people do go into Europe a little bit before March and maybe go on the There's a Portugal winter tour that people can go and compete in and get a couple of early runs. Anybody that went there this year was absolutely laughing because they'd had a 4-star long and people had got a qualifying run in before coronavirus hit.
They were the lucky one.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about what we could potentially learn from each of the countries and what we could maybe adopt in the UK from the US or vice versa. I really like the sound of tailgating, Lexi. That sounds like brilliant.
Absolutely. It makes it a little bit more of kind of a fun atmosphere for the family versus you're not just there to compete. You know, you're having a nice day out, bring the kids, kind of have a bit of a party about it and not just get in, ride your horse and go home.
And just to explain,
I think it makes more sense when you're staying multiple days.
Yeah, it's huge in US sports, isn't it? Tailgating. Like, it's not just equestrianism. Football.
Absolutely. It's massive in football. And yeah, exactly. And certainly when I went to university, we tailgated for every sport.
And I guess it's basically it's kind of a picnic out the back of the truck. But is that kind of the rough idea of it?
Basically, I mean, it's a picnic. You tend to have kind of a grill or something to cook food.
Okay.
So it's a little bit more involved than just a picnic, but the basis of it is absolutely a picnic out of the back of your truck.
A souped up picnic. That strikes me as the kind of picnic that
as
Tim Price
in the
would
US,
enjoy.
A bit souped up.
Exactly. Is there anything, Andrew, that you think you would like to take from the UK over to the US or that you sort of tried to instill in your time in the UK?
I'm a big fan of the one-day events, honestly. I think that they're really good for horses. As we talked about, most U.S. events run over the weekend. And I think we're stuck either bringing all of our horses along with us, and the ones that are left at home are, unless we have somebody infrastructure at home to keep them going, they're a little bit left by the wayside. So I think with horses being able to travel to the competition, compete on the day and go home and be back out in their paddocks and where they're comfortable is really good mentally, physically for them. I also think with the one-day competitions, it makes it more available for our owners to come and watch and support. It can, as you can imagine, it can be very difficult for them to take a whole weekend off. And if they want to come on a Friday or Saturday, then they get to see dressage. And if they can only come on Sunday, it's great that they can see a jumping phase or two, but they've missed the dressage. Where it was pretty fun to watch the owners in the UK come and they could see their horse on the day. They could see the preparation, all three phases, and then have them be home. So I wish we could do that a little bit more. I know there are some limiting factors, Some of it is heat. Some of it is light and
I guess volunteers. Travel distance, you know, and
travel distance can be one of them. Also, I think we need to make, because we have these bigger purpose-built competitions like you've talked about, they do need to pay for them somehow. So by us staying and charging for stabling and shavings and all these extra things, that's one way that the competitions are able to pay for their the buildings, which I totally understand and really respect that part of it. But I would love to be able to have more one days here to be able to get the horses out and a little bit less wear and tear on them physically.
How does it work for amateur riders in terms of that?
Because that is quite a sort of a pull on their resource, isn't it? To be able to go to an event for a few days, as you say, time commitment, they might have to take time off work. Do you think that has an effect? Do a lot of people just embrace it?
Yeah, I think going to competitions and staying for several days, it is very expensive. You have either hotel rooms, because as you're probably familiar with, we don't have the lorries in this country like the UK has. We have some horse trailers with living quarters that we can plug in and stay for the weekend. The majority of people, I would say, stay in hotels, which that adds up. So you have that added expense. You have your team at home, somebody to take care of and ride the horses. That's an added expense. Also, Americans like to take lots of lessons. And so if you're not at home, you can't be teaching lessons. Some students come with you to the competitions, of course, but there are quite a few clients that are left at home that you aren't available to kind of have income that way. So yeah, there is an element all the way around. I think competitions need the resources. And I think the competitors, it works for some and it doesn't work for others. It depends on your program and the amount of horses and how far away you are from the competitions. But I think for the horses in general, I think the one days are really good for them and the owners.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually in the UK, you know, a lot of the big internationals would still be run over a couple of days with dressage and then the jumping on a second day or even a third day, depending on the number of entries. If it's a very big class, then that's absolutely usual. But I guess the one day events, your normal, certainly grassroots, you're up to sort of 105, which relates to modified in the US. All of those would absolutely be on one day unless it's a sort of a grassroots championships or something like that. It kind of leads me on to my next question, actually, because it's something that I find really fascinating is the amount of people that sort of travel to, and I suppose it is to a degree a nature of the beast in so much as the US is such a huge country. The weather is very diverse and there is this really long eventing season, but it does require people to travel and base themselves in another part of the country to compete. And they often go, hear about eventers going down, traveling south to compete in Florida and that sort of area. How does that work, Lexi? Do people have different properties that they go to? Do they send the horses and then fly in themselves?
Yeah, again, I think a lot of professionals either own two properties, one north and one south, or they'll own one in their major location and rent one in their either southern or northern location for the other part of the year. And it is really common. I mean, I think you have very few professionals that can afford to stay north through the year because the weather just doesn't tolerate it. So you've got some that stay south kind of year round, either in Ocala or Aiken. But it really a big majority are moving north and south. And it's a big process. Some people are moving all of their jumps and their equipment and everything year round. So that's a lot of trips in the truck and trailer up and down. And then you do have a lot of amateurs who are sending their horses down with professionals down south in the winter and flying in for weekends to compete or flying in for a week, a month to get some training and competitions in. Or you have the lucky ones who can move down with their horse for a month or a few months at a time in order to really kind of immerse themselves in that program. And I think it's really a luxury that some of the amateurs have that they can extend their competition season. But it's also quite difficult for people if you're not riding at home and you just fly in and ride your horse. You know, that's obviously not ideal either. You're not doing as good of a job if you're not riding every day. So I think there are real pros and cons to that situation. It's it's kind of a necessity for the professionals, but the amateurs are making both decisions. And I think it is a big decision for people as to what works best for them and their horses.
What sort of months of the year are we talking about in terms of being north and south?
Yeah, so everybody changes a little bit. But most professionals that I know move south between November and December to kind of get set up for when the eventing season starts down there in January. And then we'll move back north sometime between April and May. You know, a lot of them use kind of the big long competitions in the spring are mostly farther north. So that's kind of their dividing line. They'll go north for their big three long or four long and then stay north from there. So it's a pretty obvious split, really. It's after your fall four long or whatever, you go south and then you head north right before your spring free day.
Okay. What do you miss most, Andrew, when you were over in the UK? What did you miss most about your hunting?
I think from coming from America, you get used to the same competitions. I think coming to the UK, every single competition was new to me. So it was very fun to walk the cross country and to see the show jumps and the backdrops of all these beautiful stately houses and see the competitors. I really do miss those aspects of it. There's a lot that the US does offer. I mean, we have great cross country courses. We have good course designers. We do have good competitors, maybe not quite as many as the UK has, but we do have a lot of really great things that are offered here. But I do miss the quality of competitors, the quality of horses, and the beautiful backdrops.
And Lexi, how about you? What was the thing that struck you when you first came over to UK soil? Your first biggest events was Bramham, is that right?
Yeah, so I went to Chatsworth and Bramham in the spring. And again, it's just this stunning, so many of the events in the US are either backyard or purpose built. Whereas you come over here and you've got the massive houses that are in the background of all of your pictures and just absolutely stunning scenery. You know, none of these places are actually initially eventing facilities. So it's really cool to have, you know, to be galloping around and have these stately homes in the background. It's a really different feeling. You know, you're not just out eventing, you're having a lovely day in the country.
The Brits do love a stately home in the backdrop of a photograph. They really do.
Absolutely.
Now, the language barrier. Obviously, I know that everybody says things a little bit differently, but is there anything anybody has said that you just think, what on earth are they saying? The one that always gets me, never fails to make me chuckle, is porta potty. Is there anything that you just thought, what are they talking about?
I think head collar for me. I could not get that down for the longest time. Yeah, I would call it a halter and I was teased all in good fun. But you know, it took a long time to say head collar. I pictured putting something on a dragon. I don't know what I thought of, but yeah, head collar was a new one for me for sure.
Okay, Lexi, how about you?
I think one of the big ones has been stables versus stalls. To me, a stable is a large building with stalls in it, but actually here, the individual stall is called a stable. That's been a big one for me to adjust to. And also, it's very much, they don't refer to them as bell boots, they're overreach boots. So again, I kept saying, I'm going to throw some bell boots on him. And everyone would look at me and go, sorry, what?
You're going to do what now?
The other thing is the difference between blankets and duvets. Because in the stables they have in the UK, they would wear either or. A blanket and a duvet, whereas at home they were all really called blankets. Maybe a stable blanket if we were going to use it in the stable. But yeah, it took a long time when they said, "Okay, put the blanket on." I thought, "Okay, which one is this?" We would call it a comforter, which Jackie Potts thought was just the funniest thing in the world, that we'd call it a comforter instead of a duvet. So yeah,
would you call them a rug? rug? Would you call it a rug?
Yes. I think most people in the U.S. would understand what you're talking about when you called them, when you'd call them a rug. But we would call them a blanket, a turnout blanket or a stable blanket.
Yeah, blanket or a sheet. Yeah.
Or a sheet. Yeah. Sheet if you're talking about a fly sheet. But yeah, difference between blankets and duvets. That took a minute.
Okay. Good to know.
I think also we're talking about kind of saddle pads versus numnas. I remember the first time I was told, oh, that horse doesn't wear a pad with that saddle. And I was taken aback. I was like, oh, we are old school. Like, we're not putting saddle pads on, but actually they meant no half pad. You know, you still put the saddle pad on, but a pad is a half pad. So that was very different.
See, a numna, I don't even know where the word numna comes from, but I can't. It's very self-explanatory.
The difference between Fahrenheit and Celsius is something that was difficult until the day I left. Talking about what weight of either blanket or duvet we would put on would depend on the temperature. And gosh, I'd have to pull out my phone every time and check. Okay, yep, in the U.S., this is what we would do. The conversion never really stuck to me. What about you, Lexi?
No.
Oh, I 100% agree. I know that if it's single digits, it's really cold, either place. But kind of once you get into double digits, I'm like, oh, well, I know 20 is reasonable, but I couldn't tell you what that translates to.
I have to admit, whenever I come over to the US, I'm exactly the same the other way, and very confused about what I should be wearing and what temperature is going to be doing, because I'm just not the same, conversing on my phone every time. Let's just talk for a second, because we can't have and not pick your brains on Team Fox Pit, because William has been, we actually had him on the Eventing podcast a little bit earlier on this summer, and you can go and give that a listen if you would like to. He's a fascinating character. He's been at the top of his game for many, many years. He's ridden on countless British teams, and he is one of the real stalwarts of our sport. How was that experience, Andrew, for you? I know you came over in the build-up to Rio, when obviously William had had his fall the year before at Le Lion d'Angers, but was very much sort of building up to go to the Rio Olympic Games. How was that experience for you coming over to Team Fox Pit?
Yeah, it was incredible. I didn't quite know what to expect. I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but I'm so thankful that I went. I think the biggest question I've gotten from people is, you know, we've met him at Kentucky and he seems like such a nice guy. Is he really that nice? And I can say with a surety that for the 2 years I was there, he never once raised his voice at anybody. And there were some people that would have deserved it. But he is just through and through the kindest person, never became frustrated with anybody, and was just always there if you had a question for him. But I think all the things that I was able to learn from there has really helped me moving forward. A lot of it is, like I said before, Americans take a lot of lessons. So we're used to that. In the UK, it's a little bit more copy what you see. And there's very few better people to copy. And it was really nice to be able to spend that time around him. I respected him not only as a horseman, but as a person. And try and emulate that moving forward.
And on top of William and, of course, Alice and the whole family, because they're such a lovely family, there's also the absolutely brilliant Jackie Potts, who has run William's yard for nearly 30 years, has been alongside him for all of those highs and the lows. And there is pretty much, she knows everything there is to know about horses and running a yard and a tight ship. Lexi, how much have you taken from Jackie? Because that is like having a gold mine at your disposal.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, Jackie has been through literally every experience that there is to be with the horses. She's absolutely the first person I ask, you know, whether I know or I don't know the answer to something, I can go to her and say, look, this is the way I've always done something. Do you agree or do you disagree? And she'll, you know, she's the first to tell me, oh, yeah, that's great in this situation. But, you know, if it was a little bit different, you should do it this way. She's so just open with her experiences. Again, you know, they've had everything go wrong, but also everything go right with horses. So she can tell you if you're struggling, you know, exactly how they've dealt with it in the past. And this is the best advice she can give you. And it's worked in the past. So don't worry, like, have confidence in it. It'll all be okay. It's nice to know you're not going on theory there. You're going on her experiences, and she's managed to make everything work in the past. So she really gives you that confidence that she can make it work for you too.
Yeah, absolutely. And so much experience, both from Will's perspective and the whole team. What next? Because obviously, Andrew, you're back in the States, have been for a couple of years, and thriving over there. Do you ever have plans to come back to the UK in the future?
That's a great question. I would love to come back to the UK. I think for me, I was lucky enough to be able to spend those 2 years, and I personally didn't bring a horse over with me to the UK. I did find one within 24 hours of leaving the UK, which was, it was a search. But I would love to come back. When I do, I'd love to come back with some upper level horses. I think that the US provides really good competitions for us to educate our horses, and we can do a lot over here. But I think to be one of the best, you have to compete against the best in some of the best venues. And so, yes, my goal would be to establish enough of a team that I could bring one or two horses over and spend a few months and do some FEI competitions over there. I'd love that.
Well, we would love to have you back. Absolutely. Lexi, how about you? I know you're heading back home fairly soon.
Yeah, we've just made the decision kind of post Burnham Market, that I'm going to be headed back to the US at the end of the season here, which is pretty bittersweet. I'm really excited to take back kind of everything I've learned here. But again, I'm coming off a funny season. I'd hoped to accomplish a little bit more, but I think it's the right time. And I'm just really hoping we can build on what we've done here. And I mean, hopefully be able to come back for badminton or something one day. I think it's been incredible. It's time to go home, but I would love to come back again to the really big competitions to test out where we are in the future.
Oh, well, we would again love to have you back as well. And Chico's Man, who was the horse that you rode up on a market in the 4-star, the horse that you brought over here, Sprout, as he's known, has his 5-star qualification now. Dare I ask if there would be a Kentucky on the horizon next year?
It's all very up in the air. We'll be kind of changing the plan as we go next year, but I would say kind of dream plan is we'll get to Kentucky. I think there's a lot to do before then, but in an ideal world, we'd love to be running around Kentucky in April. So we'll see where we go.
Well, I'm sure there will be plenty of Brits and US people cheering you on. Lexi, Andrew, thank you both so much. It has been really, really interesting to look at both US and UK eventing and how they differ. So many positives with both, and it's just interesting to cross-reference the two. So a huge thank you for sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us on.
It.
And listeners, we hope you've enjoyed it. Whether you're listening in the US, whether you're listening in the UK or anywhere else in the world, we hope you've enjoyed this special episode of the USEA official podcast. We will be back very, very shortly. Don't forget, if you have any suggestions of anything you would like us to cover on the show, get in touch with us at US Eventing. Make sure you tag us when and where you are listening as well. We would love to see where you're tuning in from. Andrew, Lexi, a huge thank you. And listeners, we'll be back very soon. But thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.